You're listening to Fakeologist Audio Chat. To connect to our always-on and always-streaming audio chat, go to fakeologist.com/radio3. To participate in the chat, go to fakeologist.com/audio chat. Each day, we compress and upload the day's chat, be it big or small. Leave a quick message, do a whole show. All are welcome when it's related to fakeology. Now, on with today's audio.
You changed something, Tom? Now I hear you again. Do you hear me?
Audible? Yes.
Will you make an introduction for our listeners, not our readers?
Well, out there in Radio Land, it's in the UK at least, it's 22:44.
And in Switzerland, it's 23:44.
Wednesday, the, can't remember, 9th of May, is it?
Let me check that. 10th of May. It's Thursday.
Yeah, of course it is. I thought it was Wednesday. Yeah. Wednesday the 10th of May. You've got a holiday tomorrow in Switzerland, haven't you?
Yes, we have a so-called bridge between Ascension Day. The Friday after Ascension Day is always off. It's an unofficial off day, let's say. And in your country, in England, do you work tomorrow?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I haven't got to go anywhere tomorrow, though, personally. Well.
Okay. That's cool. So we have enough time to dissect 9/11. We were talking about how we found out about 9/11. We have a similar age, so we are from similar, let's say, cultural influences and political influences, and also in similar countries: England, Germany, Switzerland, Greece. Maybe not exactly the same, but still very close to all these developments in the 70s and 80s and 90s. So, yeah, very interesting, really.
Interesting. And you're the only female, well, I suppose Kelito has become over from Hoaxbusters recently, but no, you...
Oh, there are some others, I think. Women,
yeah,
here, there's Kayhem, Rochello, there is...
Unheard of.
A woman called Vidir. Ovidere, I haven't talked to her yet. There is Sophia. There is Maria Laquita. I surely forgot.
Carol. I don't know if she still checks in and looks at it, but she was good as well. She was good to have around.
What was her name? I haven't heard the name.
Surname Carol.
Carol. Oh, I don't know her.
With an E. I can't remember the surname she uses. It might come to me later. But what was interesting was listening to your how much hard work it was for you to believe this deception, start to understand this deception. You're talking about 9/11. The journey sort of was that your initial sort of line of inquiry?
Yes. I might confuse now some things, you know, because when you are in the search, especially the first months, you don't remember afterwards what you read or what you listened to, etc. And maybe you confuse what came first, what came after. But some points I remember very clearly, that when I discovered Clues Forum as a website, I had encountered the videos on YouTube already, but I didn't pay attention to it. I thought it was somehow artificially made with this Apple, and it didn't really inspire me to watch it. I first discovered the Clues Forum, and I was obsessed. I couldn't stop reading, and I had also much time because I was on a sabbatical in that time. And I was just reading and reading, and then I was stopping because I came to a point where I said, oh no, this cannot be true, this cannot just not be true. I was somehow like searching for something to disprove what I was reading, because it would let me go back to my previous, let's say, perception that actually it happened as they say or something. And I could not find anything, and I had to stop, you know, giving me the order not to read anymore and to stop. And then 2 days did never pass. It was maybe some hours or 1 day, and I had to go back and to read again and to read again. And still today, I sometimes have the feeling, hey, is it really true, or is something with my brain not working? Cannot be true that I believe something. It's so obvious. How is it possible that something so obviously faked is believed by so many people? And how can that be possible? I have no explanation, you know. You said it was similar for you somehow.
Yes, in the sense that I looked at those. First of all, I looked at the images of those towers coming down. And I looked at them again, again, and again, and again. I was obsessed.
Yes. Obsession is the right word.
I was truly obsessed.
Yeah.
For years, on a daily basis, just going back to it. Mm-hmm. I was continually fascinated by the subject of 9/11. When I found clues for them, I almost rejected it at first, in the sense of I almost got angry. No, I don't believe this rubbish. No, because it kind of turned upside down my previous worldview to an extent. It opened my whole mind about the complete fakery of it, really. It was that the television pictures had to be, you know, the mainstream media was completely what they had showed as bullshit, you know.
Mm.
Amazing to me. And I went back and I was reading clues on a daily basis for 3 years, I think, every day for 3 years.
Mm.
Back. And when I found that resource, just trying, and again, I'd go over and over and over and over and didn't necessarily believe, and I still to this day don't take in everything that clues form puts out at all.
Mm.
Less than I used to now, But there was enough in there reading between the lines and reading it daily and seeing, you know, getting a feel for it, really opened my mind and eventually changed my worldview, really, yeah, and enriched my understanding of things incredibly.
Mm.
Dinosaurs, Holocaust, I began opening up to these big new ideas, the nuclear bomb.
Yes, that was for me really enlightenment poor. This with the nuclear energy generally and nuclear rockets especially, or nuclear bombs, or also nuclear plants. The whole idea now, you know, when I'm thinking now, I cannot really prove it. I am no scientist. I cannot explain what is a bomb. Why does it have to have some parameters to work? But if you have the perception, let's say, open to the possibility that it could be not true, then actually it is quite simple, you know. You cannot have such a small thing that has no energy motor, let's say, motorization, and that goes somehow out in the outer space and travels thousands or thousands of kilometers to another continent. I mean, it's just insane. It's only understandable as a metaphor, as a fairy tale. And
you're talking about intercontinental ballistic missiles or something.
Yes, for example, in my generation, it was always a big topic. Pershing was the name of this generation of missiles that the Americans wanted to place between Western Europe and the Eastern socialist states, and there were always these debates, and they had placed them so and so many kilometers away from the borders, and then it was always a topic, you know, and there were several generations of these missiles, and how far can they travel, what can they destroy, and even one of those could destroy whole Germany, the whole country, you know. That was some terrific, terrifying
thing.
Possibility, yeah. or story, and
I mean, it's obvious now. We look at it, this control mechanism, this threat, isn't it? Now we see it as just effectively.
Yes, we see it.
It's an obvious one.
Most of the people don't see it yet, but at least it is not so day to day, let's say, threat in these days, as I see it. You know, in the 80s, it was day to day, you know. We were talking sometimes with people, with friends or colleagues. What would you do if the power plant would explode? I would listen to some music. The other one would, I don't know, go for a walk in the woods, whatever.
Just talk about it. What would you do? You know, and yeah. There used to be a siren that would occasionally go off in my village. Yes. I've said this before. And it would be, I think it was a drill, a police drill siren or something from a factory or something. But I remember hearing it and thinking, is that the 3-minute warning? And I used to think that as a child. So I lived in fear, definitely lived in fear. And having lived through that, it's quite liberating to then bullshit, isn't it? Mm. I really did live in fear of that, but we see how well it works, you know.
Yes, it's true, yeah.
Thinking was, my emotions were being controlled by the television and the newspapers.
Yeah, in my case, it was more the newspapers, but as I was reading much newspapers, the fear was very, very, very big. It was also a very politicized, let's say, generation in Greece, at least, in the 80s, and, yeah.
Had the Green and Common Women, and these were women who voluntarily had gone to camp outside air bases and set up these camps, yeah. and lived there. They were very famous, and this was an ongoing soap opera. Now, they were great promoters of nuclear weapons. Mm-hmm. They were validating it by being there. They were validating it was all as it was about these cruise missiles or these. You know, nuclear missiles being kept at these bases.
Mm.
That's the one of the narratives that kept it in English people's minds. And yeah. These women, many of them, obviously this is how it works, isn't it? That many of these women were genuine, really, you know, highly motivated and intelligent enough people who yeah. really thought they were doing the right thing for humanity.
Mm.
This absurdity of these nuclear weapons. But, yeah, they were the greatest promoters of, they were among the top promoters, actors within the promotion of nuclear weapons without knowing it at all, of course.
Without knowing it, yes. It's really a cultural misdirection completely. It's a dead end where this whole discussion was leading. You had also no choice outside of that concept. You know, you couldn't ignore it because you are in the fear. And you couldn't deconstruct it, so, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, we did. I mean, we didn't have the internet. They hadn't given us the internet yet. And of course, we did. You could be ever so clever.
The internet is a game changer. Yeah, I think that...
You can be ever so clever with the internet, can't you, Faye? Oh, aren't we clever now? We're good, we're great researchers.
I think, actually, you know, the knowledge or the thoughts... must have been around, but you could never verify that your thoughts are not just some crazy thoughts that you have because you couldn't connect with others. Maybe that's the only real difference, that now you have the internet is like an amplifier. You know, if I, because books and alternative magazines, etc., were always and so-called subcultures, which were, let's say, avant-gardistic with their thoughts. I remember that there were some guys that were a little bit older in the 80s in Athens, in my surroundings, that were talking about such stuff, but we thought they are crazy. They are somehow out of control or something. But they were just very well-read. Let's say the medium was reading, and if you didn't have access to this material, you couldn't have this.
Yes, and in a way, it's like the printing press when that came in, isn't it? It's a similar principle, really. You could say, oh, once the printing press came in, you know, the activists could print all these documents, and suddenly, you know, the government would be subverted.
Yeah.
I don't think it really worked like that, did it? I think they were. The people who allowed the printing press were always in control.
And, they actually, they were, for some hundred years, they were only printing the Bible so to keep the control.
In hotel rooms and putting it in, yeah.
Everywhere you had a Bible.
Oh, again, that's another great example of having loads of dishonest, well-meaning disciples going out and doing your work for you, isn't it? I mean, it's
yes.
I mean, at least with religion, it's kind of a way of people coping, isn't it? It does.
The word I didn't get. The word.
Not a malevolent, an all malevolent thing at all. People use it in positive ways, I think, for sure. Would you say?
Mm. Oh.
If you like this audio and want to support the site in a small or big way, please hit the PayPal donate button on the side of the Fakeologist.com webpage. You can show your support for as little as $1.19 a month by subscription or one-time donation. Thank you for your support.
Thank you, and if you want to support this audio, you can join us in the audio chat live stream of Fakeologist.com. We are musing here with Tom D27 about God and the world, as we say in Greece. Yes, you were talking about religion or Christianity, more specific.
I suppose my question was, do you see positive things in religion and the way people use it is a coping mechanism for life, and it's not completely malevolent. What would you say to that?
Coping mechanism, is that, does that come from copy, to copy something? That means to replicate? Is it like something like a model, or if religion is a good model or something?
Well, I'm not sure if we got this. The root of the word is to imitate, to cope.
Yeah,
we cope.
If religion can serve as a paradigm for a good life, something like that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yes. Okay. I mean, it's
just to be sure that I understand you. You know, I think. Actually, the short answer is no, but I have to explain why. Actually, I thought always that religion is a very monolithic concept. It doesn't have... you have to obey the concept. It is not creative. It is not open in the end. And traditionally, we have had actually only two concepts. Religion and military as the main, let's say, concepts to rule bigger societies or bigger entities of people. And I always said, although it is very unorthodox for my political views, I always said capitalism is actually a development, because capitalism introduces a new kind of control, which is through exchange and not through military, or through religion. And I was proven wrong, because capitalism is no contradiction to the military or to the religion. We see that because we have all this revival. The military has taken over all the means of communication, narration, storytelling, paradigm building, whatever human beings need as a fantasy stuff to feel themselves integrated in a community. And religions are a revival because they are against the military, let's say, control. So it's the same fucking stuff as 1,000 years ago. there has not been any development. That's unfortunately my conclusion. What do you say about that?
You blow me away. I know. Sometimes listen to these audios back and I think, fucking hell, Tom, you're such an arsehole. You're not listening to people properly and you're speaking over them. To go away and think about things for 5 minutes sometimes. I mislead myself thinking about something you said in the first sentence of it or something.
Yeah. And, yes, I know.
Anyway,
that.
I can't remember. I'm clueless. I got distracted. Excuse me.
Okay, no problem. I say it again in a short form. Religion is a concept, military is a concept, fair capitalism could be a concept because some kind of exchange is needed. You cannot rule or let's say, you cannot work with complete chaos. You need to have some form of exchange in societies. But none of them works. And I don't know why. I still don't know why. But religion is no option for me. I'm not a religious person. I cannot obey and I cannot keep faith in things that I am told to keep faith. It's something like that. Are you religious?
I wouldn't say I'm religious in the sense of no.
Okay.
I don't.
Yeah.
You know, go to church or in England we're brought up as Christians. You know, Western classical.
Yes. Churches. Protestants or Catholics or.
All I went to.
Catholics are the stricter ones, I think.
A bit weirder. Now, I happen to marry a Catholic, a Filipino.
Okay.
And
a Filipino is Catholic? It's the imperialism.
400 years of the Spanish and 50 years of Hollywood. So the Spanish left them with the Catholic religion entrenched in parts of Manila or parts of, certainly, they're really quite crossover, bizarrely Catholic. Mm-hmm. The Filipinos, some of them. Anyway, yes. And it's a bit of a weird one, the Catholic religion. Yeah, it's my daughter's 14, so she's her mother is seriously, and she can't, growing up in England, it's just alien to her. It seems weird to have a little statuette in the living room, and it has to, and people come round, and she finds it weird and spooky.
Okay, so you remind me of a very funny story now. A friend who is married, she is ethnologist, and he is from Tibet. And she told me once the story when they met and got married, and they were arranging the common house and, you know, the mobiliar, or how is it called? The furniture. And she wanted to have in the bedroom, she had some of these pages and, antiques of some goddesses of Tibet and Nepal and whatever. And when he saw that, he said, "That's impossible. I cannot sleep in the church." And she had to take everything out, you know. She had a completely other approach. She was an ethnologist, and she was really a religious person. So it was really funny. Yeah. So you're not practicing any religion, I guess. And your daughter, she's a religious person.
I mean, she just went on a weekend, on a religious weekend, a Catholic one, because her mum wants her to be confirmed as a.
Mm.
She didn't take it seriously at all. She thinks the whole lot's just no. She just doesn't buy it at all.
Yeah. It, okay, with 14, it's better if you don't buy anything.
She doesn't.
But Tom, why do you think is religion so much in a revival again? I mean, also in the alternative, let's say sphere or realm or whatever. There are so many Christians want to be again in you know, they talk about the Bible and the ancient texts. I mean, the texts themselves, they are right, really very important and interesting. They are some of the oldest texts that we have as humans. But the revival, how would you explain that?
Well, I don't know if revival is still going. Yeah, it's oh yeah. It hasn't gone yet, has it? Religion. It's very powerful still.
Mm.
It's abroad promoted, I guess. And it still works for some
promoted.
People.
It could be, I'm not sure. It could be promoted.
Isn't church part of the old establishment? You know, it's the old network of control, isn't it? So whatever happens through the church is
yes.
Nature, isn't it not still part of the control system.
Do you think they are still in the control? I mean, I think the industry, the heavy industry, is more in control than the church. But it might be also that on the higher levels, these are the same guys, you know, the heavy industry and military and church. They are, you know, in history of imagery, of painter, these are the first oil painters that were created. There is always one of the representative sphere, the king or whatever. Then there is one of the commerce. And then there is one of the military. Usually these three guys are on these painters in Italy somewhere in the museums.
Yeah.
I'm not so sure if they are still in, if they still have so much power, but I actually think they are trying to survive this transition that is going on, and they have to adapt also. They have to create new contents and to, I mean, who
we're always,
we're
always shown these grand ceremonies in St. Paul's Cathedral, and you know, they talk about the Church of England on the news, and that, you know, the cathedrals and landmarks within the structure of the nation, and it's still very much part of the pageantry, you know, the self-image that I'd have here in of England.
Mm.
Poor, whether it's a revival or not, I don't know. It's kind of like it's morphed into over time. But still used, because what, you know, there's not many better broad control structures in place, is there?
No, not yet. And somehow, it is, I think, perceivable that there is no big narrative anymore that can unify people, or I don't know. These concepts had these big narratives. Religion wanted always to be, how was the word, universalistic for everyone, that means. They went from England and from Europe generally to Africa and to Asia and whatever, and tried to bring them religion and culture. This whole colonialistic...
It was the tools of the colonial era. I mean, they did good work, didn't they? You know, missionaries and stuff was going out and take water to...
I don't believe that they did good.
I don't know either.
It's a difficult question, because we don't know if they didn't do that, what would happen. And I personally believe it is possible that other structures would have been created. All the structures that were expanded through colonialism, they destroyed. Mostly they destroyed. They destroyed nature. They destroyed centuries-old structures of the societies of whatever kind, you know. We cannot say it was not good enough because, I don't know, women were cooking and men were hunting, so we want something, I don't know. The genuine structures that the indigenes, for example, in Australia, they had their own patterns of time, language, motion, living spaces, all this all was destroyed. And
Really, you look at that and it's just outside on a dark night or something, and you stand on a snail and you crunch it, you know. Nature's so cruel.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just talking about, I'm being bizarre. That idea that is horrendous in a way. It's messy when you mess with nature. It does get messy, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Nature is messy.
Nature is, you know, that's the difference. I mean, colonialism for me is not nature. Nature is transcendent. You accept nature without any question. If it rains, if there is an earthquake, whatever. If it is nature, you don't say anything about it. You accept it. It's transcendent per se. That's nature. Nature is the nature of nature, let's say. I'm bizarre too. You infected me with your bizarreness. But I mean, colonialism.
About, the nature of nature, the nature. I'm just sort of, you know, I'm not really putting forward any firm ideas here. I'm sort of thinking out loud for conversationally, and it gets a bit deep into.
Yeah, but isn't, you know, colonialism is not.
Yeah, you're right. Colonialism is something is
deliberate.
But isn't nature like deliberate. That in the sense that the powerful animals, stronger animals in an environment would dominate a certain environment and then spread out?
Are you sure these are the stronger animals? What is strong?
Stronger animals, perhaps ahead of the food chain in a certain supply ran out, then they would start looking elsewhere. It'd be natural. They'd just naturally explore and spread their wings, and it can get, you know, I don't know. What am I talking about? Colonialism. Is it, you know, is it nature or not? Human beings are always going to do that, aren't they? Do you know what I mean? Don't you think? Or maybe not. I mean,
I think there is an idea how to, for me at least it is helpful. I don't know if you like it. I think there is a difference. Let's stay with the example of colonialism. Instead of going to Africa, into a village, and to, I don't know, to kill those who resist, and then to occupy the others and to bring them culture, you could just go there and ask for something, beg for something. I think that is a big misled, or how is the right word? And it applies to really, as far as I have found out, it applies to almost everything that has to do with all the means of life that you need for your existence. Instead of begging for something, you want it with force. That is one of the biggest, it has to do actually also with, or mostly with the power of language, with the power of humans as existing entities that are capable of communicating with human language. That means they are capable of asking for something and not taking it with force. And this is for me the biggest problem, actually. I don't see any other problem.
But how are you going to change? I'm sure there were people, colonial people, who went out, who tiptoed around and said hello to the natives and didn't want to disturb them or their culture at all. I'm sure there were those people in colonial capacity. But does it work in reality? Because someone's always going to try and get an edge, aren't they? People there.
We don't know if it works in reality. Nobody has ever. It has never been a majority policy. Yeah, it has been some whatever poets or some other thinkers or writers or whatever have maybe pledged, or what's the word, pledged it, has opened out for that. For such
an idea.
But it was never a majority topic. Majority is always for fight, competition, and this direction. It's completely wrong direction.
Dominates, exploit, I mean, this is where we see it seems bad, it seems wrong, it seems unfair, dominating and. Could we make a case for it being that's human nature, actually?
No.
That's just the way it is.
No. Because human nature is not only nature, that's the difference. Human nature exceeds the natural because it has language. It has capacities that go further than nature. Nature has no reason. Nature is arbitrary. Nature is
not cognizant.
Yes, or whatever. Nature is let's say nature is a closed system and human existence.
Are we part of nature, though? We are part of it. We're animals within nature.
That's one of the big problems, you know, in Western culture and tradition. It is not clear what is animal, and it is not clear what is human, and it is not clear what is the difference. The animal, let's say, quote-unquote, is expulsed out of the human nature. So if you speak of human nature, it always presupposes that you have excluded the animal of that entity. And the opposite, if you talk of animal, you exclude the human. And that is exactly wrong, because there is another dimension to the human capacity. It is to accept both, actually, and to negotiate both in its existence. Oh, no, I'm bizarre again. Your turn to be bizarre.
Well, I mean, I know it's interesting. I think we're beings. You could say we have beings. You were saying we can discuss things. We can talk. We have language to talk about things and rationalize and, you know, and we can. And I think in general, hopefully, is going forward, learning as it goes, mistakes. Because of this communication. The thing is, what we see, it's going forward on the back of a whole load of fucking lies, on bullshit.
I'm absolutely sure it's not going forward. I thought that. I thought that very long time of my life, but I don't believe it anymore. I think it is misled completely the last 500 years.
It's like a cell, isn't it, in a living body. It's not stopping. It's always moving. A better way of saying it. Civilization. And you don't think it's getting better. It's improving.
I wouldn't also say it is worse. I would say it is
without improving necessarily.
it's not improving, but it's becoming more complicated. But on the same point, it is not. It needs a. It's rhizomatic. You know what that means?
It's like
this number. What would happen? Go 2, 4, 16, 16 minus 16 is 300 whatever, 300. It's rhizomatic. It's exploding as a differentiation, but it's not improving and it's not getting worse. It's like a carcinoma, like cancer cells, something like that. And that means it's always the same problem, actually, always the same conflict, always the same internal, unresolved problematic or whatever. Still there?
Yes.
Still there. Actually, that is a good point, Tom, to jump to the point, to the topic of EGI, because I will explain. In order to be less bizarre. Because...
to be less bizarre, you've
got to... No. You know, we were talking about the animal aspect and the human aspect in Western culture, where it is the animal aspect is expelled out of the human entity, and the human is expelled out of the animal entity, let's say, corpus or whatever. And EGI, if I understand EGI, I understand it in my own way. I don't know exactly what Unreal means, because I haven't talked to him also, so I don't really know all the theories. Yes, I know what the term means. I wanted to say that one of the aspects that I see in in this proposed concept of Unreal is that the elite, whatever now that means these smaller groups of privileged contemporary inhabitants of this world, was that correct? Which have access to almost indefinite resources and powers, that they seek a completion to be complete. completion or completion of their worldly entities, bodily existence, on that metaphoric level that has to do with the corporal only. So they try to reach a spiritual completion through the transformation of their bodies into the dissolution of the contradiction between sexes. Was that somehow understandable? I'm not sure. I'm translating, and you are, what are you doing? You're distracted.
Excuse me, if I am.
Yes, I think you were not listening.
The dissolution, yeah, the dissolving.
Dissolving.
Oh, no, it's a good word. Your word might have been the right word. But yeah, it's an interesting thought, isn't it? It's like the idea is being put into our minds. As I said to you, I'd certainly, although I don't embrace the thread that Unreal started, certainly much of the thread, of the EGI thread on Fakeologists.
Yeah, but that doesn't matter, you know, because it's something completely new, you know. He is doing field research, you know. It means he has to try to find examples to materialize a thought that is quite abstract, you know.
Maybe it takes
30 years to come to a stage that is convincing, but that doesn't matter. It's important to understand the concept, I think.
Dissolving sex is so that man becomes woman, woman becomes man. On my mind, in all on people's minds, that actually we're, you know, it seems to be, you know.
Maybe it's understandable if you see it as a wrong way to reach a completion or completion, or how's the word, on a spiritual level. In order to be a complete, let's say, human being, you have to dissolve the contradiction between your human and your animal existence. And many others, but we talked now about the animal and the human. That's why I jumped also to that topic of EGI. One of these contradictions. And if you try to solve that through a metaphor, that means through changing your body from a woman to a man, and in order to have both sexes, it's actually a wrong way to reach the dissolution.
Messing about. That seems weird. Yeah, men being men and women being women. Yeah,
it's a practice that is actually really implemented in many cases. Yeah.
In some ways, what you're saying makes sense to me. That we are just a man, you know, mankind. I could have been a woman if my, you know, if it had worked out a different way in my mum's womb. It could have gone the other way or something, or the different sperm of my dad had reached my mum's egg or whatever. I could have morphed into someone, into a woman. I mean, we're more made out of the same stuff.
I'm not sure.
And men and women
I think that from the perspective of, maybe I have to say it otherwise, if there is a difference between sexes that is genuine from nature, that then from each perspective of from the perspective of the male nature and the feminine nature, it is not determinable what the other nature is. It is an other. It is something that runs always under other. It is not perceivable for you, from your perspective, what is the feminine perspective. And it is not perceivable for the feminine perspective, what is the male perspective. In this unperceivable and undeterminable is the whole history of that. If you destroy this undeterminable, for example, by combining both concepts or by trying to dissolve them through some metaphor, we can change the body, we can change the mind, we can change the clothes, we can change the habits, we can change the walks, we can change whatever. then you don't destroy actually anything else. You destroy the concept of pluralism in life, and you it's fascism, from my understanding. I don't know if I was somehow understandable.
Yeah, you say metaphor? Do you say metaphor?
Yes, it's metaphorical, all this stuff.
Metaphorical. Yeah. No, I totally agree with you. I think it was well said, really. Yeah, it's an outrageous, I think, in a sense. If there was some real movement to sort of get rid of sexes and sort of blend the sexes into one. But I don't think, I think perhaps, okay, in the past, men needed to be strong and tough and work the machinery, you know.
Yeah.
And then women needed to be feminine to stay at home and look after the children to bring the next generation of workers up. You know, in an era of technology, then we don't need so many macho men. So sort of changing men a little bit, not turning into women, but this is something I see a bit of, you know, changing men slightly. We see a lot of...
Yes, I understand what you're saying. That's one of the...
It's a era it would be put gay people on television a lot, and...
It's ridiculous, you know, because it's also... it's ridiculous how they are represented. It's ridiculous how... That's the...
Gay people,
the whole stuff. That's not... Yeah, I don't know how to spell it.
Perhaps a disproportionate amount of... No, they're good entertainers often, by their natural disposition. Fine, but the way I see it would be that ultimately the human race ought to be shaped the way we are. What are we getting now into the 21st century? We're getting more, there's certainly more of the sort of needed to work macho men to work machinery and fight wars. In the Western world, more like they need to be sort of...
Yeah. You know, I think...
They could be a bit more gay. You know, they're not threatening then, are they? You know, come on, darling. No, we're not going to have a fight now. That is under control, isn't it?
That men, for example, today are allowed to go with their young children for a walk in the park or something, that it was that was not normal 80 years ago. No, they couldn't exercise their paternal role in many cases in several concepts of societies because it was not manly enough. They had to go to war to be men. They could not stay home and cook. I think that was not good actually. I mean, there are so many points, you know, and then there is also. One important part which I often think about is the entertainment sector, you know, because it is not, I think, about shaping the whole mankind. It is about specializing categories in mankind. They want some for entertainment, and they have to be like that, and they want some to work, some to fight wars. Some to represent multisexuality in television. No, there are several categorizations. It's a new classification of humanity, and especially those in the entertainment sector. They are really tragic characters, I think, because everything that they represent is so deformed and so dehumanized that it is the opposite of that, let's say, spiritual aim that the elites have for themselves to combine the opposites into one harmonious entity or whatever, which is the ideal of fascism, actually. But they do not say we are fascists, we want the whole holistic stuff or something. Yes, and the entertainment...
The coming together of man and woman makes life, doesn't it? So, in a way, that is bringing them together.
Yes, but they do it. They don't do it like that. They do not produce or whatever is the correct word in English, because children are not production, because they have nothing to do with work, and they just hire a womb, or some say they have also already artificial wombs to raise their babies. I don't know.
Eating babies. Okay. Now we're getting into this subject here, which I may not be totally on board with some of the concepts you're embracing here.
And you don't believe that they just give their eggs and their sperm to other women? And they plant them in order to not deform their bodies? Well, there are countless women have done that.
Yeah, of course they have. Yeah. So you're talking about surrogate parents and breeding of
yes.
Kids.
Breeding
okay.
Women.
And where is this happening? This is just a something you think is inevitable.
It's a whole industry, Tom. It's not something secret. They are real people. They go to India. They hire. There are whole clinics, you know, that you. I think in India you get about $5,000 if you.
Sure. That is right on.
That industrial sector in Russia also, in the Ukraine, in Poland, in India.
There's stretch marks, but you get the same baby.
You get your own baby from your egg and from the sperm of yourself, if you are the father.
So surrogate parents. Yeah. Now, do you think so? That's fine, but we know this goes on, but. Mm. When did you, what were we saying, say the Duchess of Cambridge?
Kate Middleton.
You think that there have been a surrogate parent for that child and it's just a fake setup?
She did not, she was not pregnant. I don't believe she was pregnant.
You think that?
Yes.
I don't know, but I would have thought.
As a pregnant woman, as a woman who has been pregnant, you recognize a woman that is pregnant, even though she does not have a big belly, or how is the word? You recognize her because pregnant women have a different expression in their eyes. Have you ever mentioned or noticed that? That pregnant women have a different...
Yeah, you're in the bloom of pregnancy, you're in the... I understand that. Yeah, women often look very healthy and in the.
It's like you can differentiate if you see someone who is in love. He has another expression in his eyes or her eyes. It's something like that. You know what I mean? You cannot be 100% sure.
Well,
maybe he has taken some drugs or something. But pregnant women have a different expression.
Maybe she's working her ass off, and
you would also see that
under pressure. I mean, you're working on a hunch here. You're just saying, maybe she didn't.
No, oh, I'm sure she didn't, for my part.
Not actually pregnant, and it's a surrogate, and she would have had, something stuffed up her dress to look like she'd been... I mean, no. Please don't think I'm rubbishing the idea, because I'm very open to... I'm open to that. But it's just, I don't... It's kind of like... Yeah, I'm open to it, but wavering to the side of it was a real pregnancy. I don't know.
She was standing there in the door in front of that building. 4 hours was the text. 4 hours after she gave birth. Now, obviously, it was not a cesarean birth, but because she was standing. But 4 hours after giving birth, I mean, sorry, she would have been exhausted and she could not stand there.
It depends. She might have had an easy birth.
She would be sleeping. An easy birth. How easy can a birth be, Tom? 10 minutes. I have never heard of a birth 10 minutes.
Hmm? I've only had one, and it was a pretty tough one, and ended in a cesarean.
Okay.
But I have heard of is people going in hospital and popping out babies really easily. You know, some people it's really easy the process. I'm led to believe. But I don't know. It's the third child.
It's the third child that she allegedly gave birth to, and she behaved all the time the same. As she had three times a so easy birth that they plopped out and. I don't know.
Okay. So, I mean, I must admit, I looked at the picture of her in her red dress, because they put her in the fucking same dress, and Harper's Bazaar.
Yes.
Made a big point of making a splash. Oh, it's the same dress as Rosemary's Baby. Yes. And it was, wasn't it? Exactly the same. Yes. I mean, they're just trying to put in this idea of the, as you said, you put it quite well, I think, that the elite would far rather be seen as scary Satanists,
yes,
than, well, I said,
idiots.
That's like Genealogy Club. But yeah,
transvestitation. Yeah.
I'm not sure about the transvestite bit per se for all the wars, but certainly they'd much rather be seen as scary Satanists than just boring sort of con artists, frontmen.
Yes, I understood your about that. Yes, and you know, actually, I about Kate Middleton, I am not sure if she is a trans. How is the word?
Come on, of course she's not. That's nonsense. That's nonsense.
I don't know about her, I'm not sure. But about some others, I'm sure. It's,
Faye. I mean, you're a rare bird in the fact that you're here on this site about these very rare subjects in your second language, which is very impressive. You make great efforts, but you know, you, some of your insight I very much appreciate, but you know, these flights of fancy here going towards light stuff is rare.
And the problem is, you know, Tom, if this praxis is really, and it is in society, it is really very, very good diffused. You know, it's very en vogue to undertake changes on your body. It started with all these tattoos in the 70s, and I never followed it actually, but I'm quite new to this, let's say, topic. But it's really en vogue. I mean, I read some statistics that every third woman in Switzerland has artificial breasts. I mean, that's insane. every third woman. It's not just...
Third woman in Switzerland has artificial tits.
Yes. That's insane, isn't
you
it?
You are joking. What's a woman? What are we talking about, a woman? When does she become a woman? You know, at 16, 17, 18?
Maybe 15, maybe 14, maybe 12. It depends.
Every woman, one in three women of all ages across the whole board. No, that's bullshit. I'm not having that. The age of 30, one in three women over 30, and
So you think maybe the statistic was propagandizing these operations that they do, this chirurgical stuff, you know, it's like advertisement.
My knee-jerk reaction in conversation. I mean, we can look at this statistic and look it up and stuff. Ourselves,
yes,
can't we?
But you know, transhumanistic. The whole concept is there is much technology, and you can do so much with your bodily existence. You know, I will take now a completely different part of that topic. For example, if you break your arm. You can not only, not if you break your arm, if you need a prosthetic, you know, you can choose so many different styles, designs, colors, etc. for your prosthetics. That is artistic, it's designed, it's high culture, you know. You have there is one very famous woman who changes all the time her prosthetics and has a snake designs or bird designs or whatever. That's also in the same pattern, you know. It's the same topic. It's the technological approach to living bodies. Where does the natural body end and where starts the artificial body? If you have a heart bypass, it's also artificial. Or if you have a tooth or teeth that you exchange, it's also artificial. It's also a prosthetic. It's no more natural. So breasts are a little bit a bigger change, but it's only a quantitative change. It's not a qualitative change, you know. it's an intervention in your body. So it doesn't have any end. You can change everything. That's what they say, but actually it doesn't work. They cannot produce swine hearts that are genetically modified so that you can make a heart transplant without killing anyone in, I don't know, Bosnia and stealing his heart. You can grow them in the laboratory, but it doesn't have any, it is not successful till now.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But it's insane, you know. I would not like to do something like that. If I'm going to die, I will die. I don't want to have a heart transplant or something.
It's the natural extension of technology, isn't it? I mean, are there people behind the scenes somewhere with just like a brain in a bowl of water and they're still alive? You know?
You think so? Was that a question?
Well, it was a question. I mean, what about life extension? I wonder how far it goes to. Life these days with advances in medicine for a long time. A long time.
Yes, I know, but...
There. So the very, very rich behind the scenes that we don't know about, we'll never be privy to these conversations. I do sometimes wonder, you know, if that's... but it's the kind of thing Alex Jones used to talk about. Oh, they got all the life extension technology. That's where they got the hand in. So I suppose...
Yes, they have some spooky technologies, but, you know, blood drinking or cellular regeneration with, I don't know, baby blood or something. So really... really insane stuff, but I don't know. The problem is that would be the second biggest problem of the at least Western civilization. I say it always because I don't know the other civilizations. If there are some others, I am not sure anymore. But the second biggest problem is that things are always thought as eternal, and things have to have an end. You have to, there has to be a concept sometime that, you know, this infinite thinking of the Western culture, everything has to be conserved and kept and life extended and beauty kept and, I don't know, it's insane. There is time, and human time is, has an end. This end is not accepted. And if you see actually in the medical sector...
When is this end? What are you talking about? Human time has an end.
Human time has an end. We die sometime. Sometime we die.
Yeah, sorry.
We don't know what is afterwards. That's what I mean. And
yeah.
This desire, you know, to be alive for 200 years or all these technologies that are based on this desire... And the opposite is actually taking place. The international medical associations have lowered, or what is the right word, have put the level down for life extension measurements. Now it is not necessary to have, I don't know what it was, 80% brain action in order to be declared alive. Now it is only 60%, and maybe sometime it's 50. So they can declare you dead before you die, because they have to free the beds in the hospitals.
I think, yeah. I mean, probably more to the truth is that you know, to the other side naturally and see what is or not on the other side of death. But probably the truth is that, you know, it may not be.
We don't know. The truth is we don't know. And we cannot know before we know. That's the truth.
We may have been, you know, that's one thing that we may have been educated out of that. There may be some truth, you know what I mean, that civilization has found.
If it is like that, we have no approach to that knowledge anymore, or maybe we never have.
Maybe the spirituality. Well, people used to take spirituality as read, didn't they? They took that as read. That's why religion is so powerful and credible, in that it served the spirituality and the signs and the, you know, well, there's a sign. I don't know.
I don't know.
But were people previously much more in touch with a kind of natural spirituality. And
spirituality is always culture, it's never nature, because it is humanly created. But what we see, I think, now is that it's a time where there are not so many concepts, for example, for approach to such knowledge or imagination of approach to such knowledge.
No, it's being educated away from people. That's what I see. It's the intelligent view would be that, of course, there isn't anything in that sort of silly stuff of, you know, psychics and all this are constantly exposed on TV. And it's like the prevailing view is, yeah, that's a load of old rubbish, really. That's the intelligent view. And it's when that I'm being told that I start to think, actually, you know, possibly something we're not being told the truth about.
Yes.
Possibly. You see what I mean? The prevailing wisdom, you know, that's always the one I'm going to be next be amazed by not being right. And I suppose my quest is for the fantastic, and I'm still looking for it, you know.
And there is also, you know, the approach that we in this surroundings have, you know, I mean now the Western culture, not the surroundings of ecology, is so monolithic also. You know, as a musician, you know that you cannot approach music with intellect. You cannot understand music. What will you do? What means understand music? Music is a specific approach, needs a specific approach. What is it? Describe it. You cannot. You can speak about it, but you cannot describe it. You cannot determine it. You cannot apply it to everyone. It is very subjective. It has to do with imagination, with listening, with emotion, with whatever, you know. And it is the same, I think, with what we call spirituality. You cannot approach it by analyzing it. You cannot analyze spirituality. You need another approach. But Western civilization just always analyzes things. So, of course, it gets lost, because anything you cannot analyze is forgotten after some time. You know what I mean? If nobody listens to music, nobody is going to play any more music. You don't play music only for yourself. It's a it's a common experience also. It's a whole world, let's say.
Yeah, you can play it on your own, but yeah, I think.
Yeah, you play on your own maybe, but you play always in the same realm where imaginary others are. It's always a common experience. It's like a language. When you speak, even if you speak all alone, actually you speak in that realm where all the others can speak also and can listen also. It's the common. I don't know.
Yeah. Nearly 1 o'clock there, Faye. We've been having a go for a while. Can I do a good evening now?
Yes, of course. We meet again.
Happy holidays, and I'll talk to you again.
Have a not bizarre night. Bye, Tom. It was nice to talk to with you.
Yeah,
bye-bye.
Bye now. Bye.
This is Matty from Dusseldorf, and you're listening to Fakeologist Radio on fakeologist.com.